This is the Empire Podcast, released April 9th, 2023. Episode 627. Works on my machine.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Is it the end of Moore's Law?
It is the end of Moore. I'm not sure. I think we already hit the end of Moore's Law.
I think so. Can we officially say it's gone?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of pieces on the internet about it being dead for a long time now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right. Yes, sadly, Gordon Moore.
Yes.
Gordon E. Moore passed away. It was just after we recorded the last episode, I think. It was 94.
That's right.
What an innings.
Yeah, good.
As we say here in Australia.
Uh-huh.
Is that a, that wouldn't be a phrase in the US because it has to do with cricket, so.
Right. I mean, people could say it about baseball, I suppose, here, but no, they don't.
There's innings in baseball, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Right,
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No, they don't, it's not a, yeah, not a saying here.
Okay. There you go.
But yeah, 94. It's it's a long, very influential career. And
what was he doing in his later years? Do you have any idea?
No. You?
No idea. That's why I'm asking. Otherwise, yeah. I would have said, oh, yeah, he's been working. He was still working until this startup. No.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Do engineers actually retire? I just saw this on Twitter before I logged on. They're going, oh, no one's, you know, because the financial situation today, you know, no one's ever going to be able to retire. And I'm going, and then I just thought to myself, well, I'm probably never going to actually retire. I can't imagine just sitting around doing nothing. Like,
I literally was having this conversation today as well on a Slack channel I'm part of. There's someone who actually is retiring.
Are they an engineer?
They are. Yep, exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay. At a ripe old age of what?
70, I think.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Long career, and yeah, I think I don't know. I learned that after I was kind of musing on all this stuff, but it was just the same kind of thing of like, what am I going to do if I ever retire? You know, like first off, if I can ever retire, hopefully so. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm pretty frugal. I save my money.
Yeah, but what you've got to define retirement for an engineer. I mean, for me, defining retirement for an engineer means I've got enough money that I don't have to actually do anything,
right.
But my hobbies don't die. I still keep doing my hobbies.
Right. I think that's what it comes down to. Like, will I stop doing electronics? Yeah. I mean, yes, I'm sure at some point the interest will wane and, you know, or my eyesight will get so bad or my hands will, you know, I won't be able to solder anymore. My hand, you know, like my health will fail me at some point.
Yeah, but you can always do something. The good thing about engineering is that, electronics engineering is that you can, you know, even if you can't, okay, your hands are shaky, you got Parkinson's and you can't solder anymore or something, you know, if it's that bad or something like that, or, you know, your eyesight's so far gone that you can't see, you know, you can at least still, like, I don't know.
You can do simulations if you wanted to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Yeah. You can still
do
research and you can still,
accessibility mode on a computer, you know, you still could do, coding if you wanted to. I think, what it really comes down to is probably, in the later years, if I'm still interested in it. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to think about. I think about my other hobbies, and which are minimal right now. My main hobby is raising a child.
I can see you straying from the path. You're not as hardcore as, you know, myself, because you weren't an early hobbyist, right?
Mm. Do we want to do some comparisons about electronics work in the past 6 months?
True, but I wager that I'll be doing it a hell of a lot longer than you will.
I mean, yeah.
I reckon I will still have the hobby
Here's the other thing. You're a lot healthier than I am generally, so like you probably will have better health. People probably know like how much you work out. And, like you're a very healthy, health-conscious person. Like,
yes.
Yep. I am not like that.
Yeah, but you're not like obese or, you know, it's not like you're unhealthy. You just don't You're not hardcore.
That's not one of my hobbies.
Isn't one of your hobbies. Yeah, that's right.
High intensity training. Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah, no, yeah. I just got back from the gym. I just had a shower before this because I was just sweating like a pig coming back from the gym. And I did it last night as well. Yeah. So I like in within 24 hours, I've done two hardcore high intensity workouts.
Right.
So
right. If you wanted to compare between the last time that one of us did a workout, I think that would be very disparate as well. I generally do agree. You're right. You started as a hobbyist. You have, you know, had your professional career. You will probably continue as a hobbyist a long time from now.
Yep.
I do agree with your assessment generally.
Even if I'm not doing the daily engineering thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's still, there's some interesting engineering thing that I'm reading or thinking about daily. And I don't think that'll never be the case. So,
right. I don't know if I'll give up the mindset, but I might give up the mechanics.
Right.
Yeah. So
it's interesting. Well, I've got an interesting segue for that because I just released on my second channel, if you haven't seen it, I went to the Manly Warringah Radio Society last week and they held a vintage kit evening. And invited as one of the...
If you want a crowd that is into electronics into their many later years, you go to
a ham meetup, yes.
That's right.
Spot the average age. I was the youngster there. Like, you know, it's
son, you got some dark hair on your head there.
exactly. It's like...
I'm half gray. Yeah, we said you got a lot of dark hair on your head there.
Yeah. I think there were four females there.
That's great.
Yeah.
So Warringah is an area, is that right?
It's an area in Sydney, yeah. Manly, Warringah. It's the northern beaches, sort of like
cool. Beach. What got you out there?
I've actually been there before. I shot videos. My mate, Mal, Fade, he actually invited me.
Cool.
So, yeah. And of course, my mate Tricky Dick Smith was going to be there. So,
I did see the photo that you posted.
Yes. He was the other guest. So, him and I judged the displays, and I actually took in some vintage stuff, and I couldn't vote for myself, of course. But, you know, I had my collection of vintage kits and things like that. Cool. And, yeah.
Run it out. What did we see? I mean, obviously we can go watch the video. I'll link the video in.
Yeah, you can go watch the video. Yep. And tons of like old school, you know, ham receivers, like, you know, do it yourself kits. Mm. I bought in my vintage Intel kit from the 1970s. I built in some of the projects that I famously built in Electronics Australia magazine and stuff like that. Bought in my old Tandy kits and things. Yep. And we finally got Dick Smith after 55 years
to
hold up a Tandy beach ball.
Oh.
Right, that's just an in-joke for everyone who understands the rivalry between Dick Smith and Tandy back in the day. You know, that was like, they were the two hobby outlets where you, you know, bought your parts from, you know, Tandy and Dick Smith. Mm-hmm. So it was, yep. Anyway, yeah, that was fun.
So Tricky Dick was there.
Yep. Dick was there.
Yep. Still spry in his...
Oh, he's still sharp as a tack. He's mid-70s, I think. You think he's 76 or something, maybe? I don't know. We can check up his wiki. What does his wiki say?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting with, like, these local...
Entrepreneur. He's born in 44. Same as my dad. Was born in 44. That makes him 79? Are you serious? Yeah. Oh, man, no. Like, he's sharp as a tack. No, he's still the high spirit. For people who don't know, we'll link in the video of him giving a talk at the same Manly Warringah ham thing about his adventures. He was the first to solo around the world in a helicopter. He was the first to do it. He's gone on all these adventures. He's knowing, you know, like, he sold Dick Smith back in 1982 or something. It was, you know, it's basically ancient history. He's more known as an adventurer, and he was the head of the Civil Aviation Authority here in Australia for quite a few years.
Retired from his thing, he had no shortage of things to do.
He had no shortage of things,
hobbies.
Yeah, and he started up food companies to make actually Australian-made food. This was back in the days when all our food was, you know, the trend was starting to be, like, made overseas and stuff. He formed, you know, an Australian food company to get stuff locally made. And, you know, he's had all sorts of entrepreneurial things over the year. So he's more of a business. Like he is a, you know, he is a hobbyist. That's why he turns up to a vintage ham meetup, and he's a ham, of course.
Mm.
And his call sign is VK2 Dick without the C. Yeah.
Nice.
So,
nice.
Yep.
Nice.
And
it'd be really great if he, if one of the food companies he started was like a ham. Like a canned ham company or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, right, canned ham. Yes. Spamming, yeah. Yep. Not spam in a can, dick in a can. Yeah. Dick in a can.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Right. Oh, I'd sell a mozza. I'm telling you. Yep. Anyway, I put up a new photo on his page, actually, that I took there. So, yep.
Great.
Yeah, and he's still looking fantastic, as you can see. So, anyway.
That's fine.
Yeah, Tricky Dick. So yes, he's still doing the, you know, still doing the hobby thing. You know, he's still, you know, you can still call him a hobbyist, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Cool. You also went to the EV show. I don't think we talked about that last time, did we?
No, I don't think so. Show? Yes, I did go. There is a video on my second channel. I didn't really go to shoot it. I did take my camera, but there is a walk around. I actually did like a walk around video, but I didn't like do any interviews or anything like that. It's just a walk around. Although I did interview Mal, who's Fade.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a little talk with him about catch up and stuff. But
about your favorite electric vehicle. Is that the one that you guys chatted about? The Sinclair C5.
Yeah, the Sinclair C5, yes. But he's now got a solar-powered boat.
Yeah.
So he got a boat on Gumtree for like $50 or something.
Oh, wow.
He converted it to solar power. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, so the EV show, anything worth seeing or no?
No, I did briefly catch up with Walter. Why do I always call him Walter? The fully charged guy.
Oh, cool.
Yes, okay. Red Dwarf for Robert. Robert, why do I always call him Walter Llewellyn? It's Robert Llewellyn.
Robert Llewellyn. Okay.
Robert Llewellyn, yes.
Yeah, for those fans of Red Dwarf. One of the hosts of the show.
He's the founder. Yeah, he's the founder and one of the hosts of the Fully Charged. Yeah. So I had a brief meeting with him. And he's a really top bloke. So I didn't want to bother him with an interview because he was so busy. Like everyone was trying to get a selfie with the Red Dwarf dude, you know, he was extremely busy. But that was quite a large show. I was actually quite impressed by that. I was amazed that it basically put on by a YouTube channel. Like, you know.
Well, a production company plus YouTube channel.
Well, I guess they're a production. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just.
Yeah. But conferences are nothing to sneeze at. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can always hire it out, but then you got to gather the money and.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. You know,
As a conference organizer myself, dude.
Yes.
Small potatoes.
It actually wasn't that cheap to go to. It was, you know, fairly expensive to get a ticket or whatever. But the thing that I found amazing is that all the talks they had. I think 5 different locations for talks. So there was one outside, there was a tent outside, and there were like 4 locations inside. And all of them were standing room only, even for the most like trivial, like marketing presentation. You know, it's like some companies giving some talk on, you know, home solar or something because they're flogging, you know, home solar stuff or whatever.
Right.
Standing room only. Like, you know, I was just amazed that people were there for the talks. It was just like, wow. I was stunned. Like usually, you know, like it's usually hard to fill up a talk at a trade show, you know? So.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Well, I guess it depends on the type, but.
The thing that's interesting about this sort of thing is like, so like you and I think about like technical talks at technical conferences.
Right.
And there's like a slate of that sort of thing. This is like technical talks at a.
This is Joe Public.
Right. So everything is kind of like amazing and different, but and it sounds like it was well attended too. So it's like another thing to do.
Yep.
Or another thing that's included. Mm. So yeah, maybe people are just trying to maximize their output. I don't know. That's great though. You should give a talk there next time.
Yeah, I was stunned. Like I was there for most of the day and like I was there for the last talk or whatever. And it was still, you know, it was still full at the last talk. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So really amazing stuff.
It's great.
Yep. But I still can't, damn it. They still, can somebody please, if you know, send me an email or leave it in the comments or do something. Is there a bloody EV available It's just like a station wagon with a big boot that you can actually put stuff in. They just focus on bloody, like, making them, you know, aerodynamic and stuff. Like, no, I'll happily trade off range for boot space, like please.
A big boxy cargo carrier thing.
Yeah, there are. Well, you know, you can get a giant Mercedes or something, but it's like 100,000, 150. Like,
right,
is there
right,
just
right,
like
right.
a like a boring looking station wagon EV? Yeah. You know, it's like a, because
I don't know about station wagon, but in the US at least, there's minivans that are going electric now that are like,
you can get vans, but they're fairly expensive. I sat in one and I had these luxurious reclining seats.
I'm going,
come on, seriously, just lower the price, take all that crap out.
Right, exactly. Right. You're like, basically take the skateboard, put the biggest like metal cage you can around it, that's street legal.
Yep.
Make it sharp edges. I don't give a shit. And then sell it to me. I'll put it in seats myself. Thank you.
Yes. Exactly. It's like, because we've got like a 7-seater 2011 Nissan Dualis Plus 2. It is. The Plus 2 is the two extra seats in the back. Okay. And we hardly ever use the two seats in the back, but, you know, it's good for our holiday trips
because
we have to like load the thing up. And we'd like to buy
a full... You are squarely in minivan land. That is, I'm not sure how big minivans are in the US.
But we've got a roof rack thing on top. Yeah, you know, we've got one of those pod things as well. So when we go on, you know, large trips, you have to take the pod. But it's just like, it's so full, we can't see out the back of it. And, you know, it's fairly boxy. It's got like, you know, a tailgate thing, and it's not, you know, sloped at the back to make it look aerodynamic. So, you know,
I have a feeling that I maybe mentioned this on the show before, but one of my favorite brands that I've ever seen was actually the cargo carrier that my folks had when I was growing up.
Mm.
And it was just like a, you know, roto molded plastic injection, you know,
piece of crap. Yeah.
It like really was not well made. It was made by Sears, but the brand name.
You used to be able to buy kit houses at Sears.
Yeah, that's right. But the brand name was X Cargo, like extra cargo.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it also looked like a snail shell. And I was like, oh my God, that is like my favorite X-Cargo. Brand.
I am looking at X Cargo.
Isn't that great?
Oh, that's also, no, it, it's S-Cargo. Just a pod. Are you sure it's a car?
No. It's just the pod. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, the pod. Okay, right.
Yeah. No buying cars at Sears that I know of.
Oh, okay, right. giant pod. We don't have the hard shell one. We've got a soft shell.
Giant pod.
Yeah, that's what I want. Give me a big freaking roof rack, a big 1970s roof rack, and a station wagon. You know that, like
Dave is in the optimization stage of his life. Right.
Oh boy, I did think about. I haven't discussed the topic with Mrs. EEV blog yet. I'm sure it'll be a hard no, but I do like the Aptera. Have you seen the Aptera?
All the brand names are different where you are, so that's the other thing. You know,
No. This is the Aptera Motors. I'll send you a link.
Okay.
Aptera US. There you go. It's the fancy looking solar powered EV.
Oh, it looks like a plane.
It looks like a three-wheeled plane kind of thing. It looks like
it looks like the wheels wheels would lift up after the wings pop out or something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
You do like this or you don't like this?
I like it. I like the concept. I wouldn't and it's cheap. Like it's relatively cheap because it's bare bones, right? Uh-huh. It's just bare bones. And they will apparently sell them in Australia. But I thought it'd be fun to do a cross Australia trip. More like a motor scooter.
Yeah, it looks like.
But I would love to do a cross Australia trip in that. Because I was actually Dick Smith on his I didn't know this, but Tricky Dick Smith, he actually held the record at one point for a crossing Australia in an EV. This was back in the 80s, right?
Huh, really?
So, yeah, in a solar power. Was it solar powered? Yeah, it was a solar powered EV. It was one of the first, you know, early prototype. Yeah, he actually held the record for traveling across Australia in an EV in the 1980s, right?
You go across the outback, you get a lot of sunshine. But
Exactly. Yeah. And you just, apparently you can sleep in the back. Apparently the cargo space, could actually, if you really wanted to, you could. Kind of like there is enough room in the back or something to sleep.
I guess this is another hobby you could have in retirement, you know?
Exactly. Like I would.
Those tires look like they would literally fall off the car. This looks like, this is basically an upgraded version of the Sinclair C5.
Right. Yes. Yep.
That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. Solar powered.
Those are like the wheels of a wheelbarrow.
I've got a second channel video and running through the numbers and yeah, you could probably like, maybe like, yeah, solar power cut. Like, cause it's only got 800 watts worth of solar panels. Right. And if you just run the numbers, 800 watts doesn't put much energy per day into your EV. Right. So you're not going to be able to drive it continuously, even if you've got full sun in the Australian outback in the middle of summer.
You'd be like Mark Watney going across the Mars landscape.
Yes, on the Mars landscape. Yep. You've got to stop every, 6 hours or something and recharge
pull out the panels, brush them off
and maybe you'd have to carry some bigger panels and plug them in or something, but I would love to do that. So I would love to buy one of these, do that trip, and then maybe sell it because I have no use for it afterwards.
So when you get there and fly back from Perth, that's what you'd do?
Yeah.
I'm only driving this one way.
Well, I'd maybe go across and back, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, yuck. Yuck.
Yeah.
No.
What?
No, thanks. No, I hate road trips, Dave. That's
You and I did a road trip.
Yeah, it was a short one.
We did a road trip down to Canberra. Canberra's only like 2.5 hours though. So
yeah.
He barely survived, folks. Barely survived.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what do we talk about? I mean, we can't fill 2.5 hours.
And then we got there and we ended up at the wrong location with a paddock full of kangaroos. And it was oops. Yeah. And then we were locked out of our apartment because we didn't have the keys or something.
Yeah, that just came up. That was actually 6 years ago this week.
Oh, really?
That I was there.
Jeez. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Any more plans for coming back to Australia? With the wife and kids, kid, singular.
That's right. No, that's a long ass flight with a child.
Yes,
tow,
with a child.
As you may know.
Yes, of course. Yeah. 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 No, I love road trips, but the thought of like traveling 14 hours to the US by plane is just like, it's just torture.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah. Generally I've been a little down on travel, like unlike I used to be. Obviously I want to be home for my child and my wife to help take care of the child. And I think I'm just, further introverted. So, I see the world through my microphone and my screen, Dave.
Well, it's only going to get worse. You do realize this because it's to the point where,
of course,
I miss daddy, start talking and they start realizing that daddy's not there. And How old now?
Little one's two.
Two.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So expect it to get worse in the next year or two when they realize that you're not there. And
Well, I mean, I'm on video chat when I'm not there, but I will be going to Prague in 2 months from now. I'll be in Prague. That's where the Embedded Open Source Summit is this year. So that is Zephyr Summit, basically, like I went to last year, is now in Prague. Never been there. That's cool.
Are you doing anything else there? Taking any extra time off, or are you just doing the
no, that's not how that works,
right?
Sunday to Friday.
Have you been there before?
No, never been.
All right. Yeah, I haven't been there either, so
it's beautiful.
I heard it's great.
Speaking of Prague denizens as well, in the world of 3D printing, the Prusa crew just released their Mark IV printer, and if you were going to get a new printer, Dave, if you ever wanted to get a printer, say you get the Prusa.
The Prusa actually, Mark IV. Right. It did pop up on Twitter the other day. I didn't know it was new, but I did see the...
That one just released. Right. They.
How much is that?
Probably like for an Aussie bucks, probably 1,500 Aussie bucks.
Oh, okay. So it's a pricey high-end printer.
Yeah.
It still doesn't look like a... Like, you can get ones that look identical and it looks like you can get ones that look exactly the same for like 200 bucks.
That's right. Yep. Right. Yep.
What's so special about it? Does it have a big build envelope? I can't tell by from the photos.
It's really the reliability and the support. So like, I mean, it's just a rock solid printer. You can definitely get cheaper ones. You can definitely make other ones as reliable, but it's just like plug it in, off you go kind of thing. And then, also open source. And
does it have its own software or does it like
Yeah, so there's Prusa Slicer is the slicer program, right, and they actually have their own marketplace now as well.
And that actually makes it, does it? Does that, like, because I can't imagine the hardware is that radically better than anyone else. It just looks like...
Well, there's some new features, I'd say. Like, there's a new, like, they're doing force feedback. Like, they have, like, a strain sensor in the tip of the nozzle.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of interesting. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And so, you know, really it's just, I like the company. They're... well supported. There's a lot of people that have them too. So then when you do run into problems, I just don't want to fiddle with it. I honestly, that's what it comes out.
Totally. Why the hell would you want to fiddle with a 3D printer? It's just dumb.
That is, right? I wanted to the first time, you know, like, I did.
Well, back in the day you had to, right?
Yes.
I mean, they're heck, they came as a kit, right?
Right.
I've still got that video of me building the early MakerBot, the cupcake or whatever it was, you know?
I am way past that part of my life, and I just need a tool. So bought a tool.
Yeah, exactly.
There are other tools. I could also, you know, ship stuff off, but I find, you know, so like 2 weeks ago, we talked about things that I want to like do more of, learn more of. One of them is just like getting better at 3D modeling so that I can crank more stuff out on my printer and, you know, kind of get 3D world feedback on it. And just having the flow that is just like click and export and it's there and ready to go. Like that is super important for me that I don't even think about it, to the point where even another thing that like I didn't really think about, Prusa makes their own filament too, but it's like super dialed in for. So it's like they control the, like, it sounds like I'm like just kind of, I am in their ecosystem. You don't get locked in their ecosystem, but like if you kind of do the happy path in that case, you just don't have to think about anything. And that's where I'm at. I'm like, don't make me think. That is my
I heard that they did an April Fool's joke where they released hexagonal filament. And apparently people say it's actually a real thing and they actually did or something. Yeah, something like that on Twitter I saw.
I mean, if you extrude it, you'd think you just changed the extruder nozzle.
I think they actually did it and they actually made spools of hexagonal, you know, filament. So do you still do the ABS thing or is it, what's the other?
No, I use PLA.
Right,
and,
PLA, yeah.
What's the other one?
I don't keep up track with this anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a TPS. That's not it.
Right.
It's in Prusa Slicer. So let me just open that up.
Yeah, I've got one of those like, what are they called? The
Petchy.
The ones that you know you actually have to dissolve it. What are the the laser printed?
Oh, like the support material.
Yeah. Resin printers SLA. Or whatever.
Yeah, SLA. Yep.
So
selective laser.
So selective laser ablation or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
PETG is the other one that I was thinking about. So I use the Prusament PETG as well. And that's kind of like more waterproof and.
Right.
Again, just dialed in, good to go.
Yeah.
That's how I made all my models for the last trade show I was at. So
I should actually get a new printer because the MakerBot I've got is so old. That it's just like it's, you know, it's sort of like hard to deal with now. I should actually have one that's set up down in my dungeon so I know all I've got to do is press a button or can I even send it a file via the network or something? Is it networkable?
I'm not sure if the new ones have networking.
Right.
I think they do. I think that, I think there's like a Wi-Fi add-on for
it. Okay. Right.
I don't have that on my, I still have the mini. So like, I don't have any need to upgrade right now, but.
No, I should do that. So all I have to do is pull the cover off it and press print and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You should really figure out what you want to print, I'd say, as well. Like, are you printing stuff?
Not really.
Yeah.
Because I know it's a pain in the ass, right? So that's the problem. Right?
Oh, yeah, it is kind of that chicken and egg kind of thing. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yep.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I would say if you got one and then you found you didn't, I would probably, like, if I were you and, like, you were actually interested in that, I'd say, like, get it, put a label on it, set an alarm on your phone, and then if 6 months, if you haven't printed anything, sell it locally you make some of your local money back.
Well, the kids are at a point where they might want to make stuff on it, you know, because they're using 3D printers at school and stuff. So, you know, But I feel as though it's a tool I should have, right? I feel as though it's, you know, I probably don't have a properly equipped lab unless I have at least a functional 3D printer, I'd say. Maybe, but I don't know.
Like, it's like, so my lab has a vinyl cutter now.
Well, I do actually have a project coming up that I'm thinking about. It'll be a bare board. I thought about searching for a case for it, But then I thought, maybe not. Maybe if I just like design a 3D printed enclosure, then I simply release that and everyone can print their own enclosure if they want. So it can either be used as a desktop thing with no enclosure, or you can, or if you want to make it look a bit fancy pantsy, you can actually put an enclosure around it. That's so it works good. Both ways. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. That's not bad. All right.
Hmm.
Seed of an idea has been planted. Yes. Dave may have a new printer at some point.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, you know, $1,000 is kind of pricey.
I know. It's not nothing. And I when I was chopping around for a new printer, I asked on Twitter and, you know, went through all the different options. And just the thing that kept coming up over and over again was just the reliability. That's all. And that's, now that I have it, I'm not letting that go.
Right, okay.
So like that's the key thing for
well
me.
I got a mini
that's right.
Maybe I should just
like
get
$500
mini.
I would say like another thing that I always thought like I need like a ton of build volume. I don't need it,
right?
And and the new slicer one of the new slicer softwares makes it a lot easier. I follow Thomas Sarlander, and he does a lot of great videos, including a Mark IV review that I can link in. But he was reviewing the new Prusa Slicer 2.6, I think, and that has some new options to like make it easier to like chop stuff up for smaller build volumes. That's another thing that's like you could always do if you really needed to. But again, like I find myself kind of designing to the build volume I have.
Yes.
And that's
right.
That's all they really need. So
Yeah, I feel as though I should have one. I feel as though my lab's not equipped. Because I'm actually doing a lab cleanup at the moment. So I'm actually like doing organization. In fact, probably today after this, I might actually go down. I'm installing more PowerPoints down in the dungeon. That's part of like a reorg down there and, you know, have stuff set up and sort of, you know, I've installed the internet down there. So, you know, step one.
You dragged that cable down there. Right?
Yep. Dragged that cable down there. That was quite an effort, but finally have it. Yeah. And that's where my RAID, you know, NAS boxes down there now. And,
oh, sure.
You know, so it's all down there. So I've got a 1 gig Ethernet connection straight down to my dungeon. And, you know, I've got power, I've got light in, I've got benches. I'm going to build another bench. I just found a pallet in the dumpster room. And I thought about just doing a quick video, actually assembling and turning a pallet into a nice workbench.
Define pallet in Australia?
Pallet. Oh, really? Pallet's not a US thing?
No, I have a vision in my mind, but I'm not sure it's the same thing.
Oh, okay. Here we go. A pallet. I will send you a shipping pallet. Really?
Yeah, like wooden slats?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a wooden slat shipping pallet.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're going to make that into a bench, though, you said?
Yeah. You can turn that. I'm pretty sure I could turn that into a bench. Yeah.
Oh, you would put something on top. Okay, I'm thinking of like the slats. You wouldn't have...
I would actually move the slats together. So I'd hammer them out.
Okay.
I'd take them out because they're nailed in. And then I'd move them together. Uh-huh. And then you sand the whole thing. And then you could even, you know, lacquer it and oil it if you want and stuff like that. But
interesting.
Yeah, I could turn a pallet into
it. I always just figured it was like really low quality wood that they use for this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. It's not great.
Okay.
Right?
Got it.
It's like...
kind of quick and dirty kind of thing.
It's a quick and dirty thing, but
Got it.
Pallets are actually quite expensive. They're worth a lot of money. They're worth like a couple $100 a pop.
Yeah, I've seen people around here often are like transporting them in bulk, you know, after like you see shipping happen.
Yeah, yeah. So. The companies that specialize in pallets, they want to get the pallets back because they're expensive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to ship something on a pallet and then throw the pallet away. Jeez, you know?
No, yeah.
It's like, but that's what somebody did here. I found a pallet and perfectly like top quality pallet in the dumpster room. You know?
Interesting.
So, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it's really crappy wood. It's not sanded. It's got, you know, crap. Like
it's not matched at all. Different colors, like, colorations. Yep.
So you could turn it into something nice, but then you'd have to really sand it to buggery. Then you'd have to oil it multiple times and do lacquer it maybe. And, you know, stuff like that to really turn it into a, you know, if you wanted a schmick looking bench, but.
I thought you were maybe going for like shabby chic down in your
shabby chic. It's mixed. I've got a desk, so I've got my old workbench. I've got my old garage bench, lab workbench there, which is mounted on the wall. Then I've got a desk, which was there when I actually bought the dungeon. So I've got a desk, like as in a work, you know, office desk. And then I'll probably make this pallet workbench. I'll probably maybe attach that to the wall or something, and just use that as like a just a mechanical whacking stuff on kind of bench. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, yeah, I don't care how it looks. In fact, I don't care how the entire dungeon looks, really. I mean, it's a dungeon, yeah, for goodness sake. You know.
That's right. That's right. Keep the lighting low.
And so I'm going to install more PowerPoints. Yep.
My first job, I worked in like the fourth bay of the warehouse that they owned.
And the so it was just like bay. Me. You're in.
Yeah. So there was like, so it was like the front first bay was like where all the office space was. It was actually like furnished. Then it was like two bays of like manufacturing. So it was at least it's like well lit and like heated and whatever.
I can
and
just
the fourth
picture
bay
it.
Was just like storage. It was like me in like, you know, I was not Milton. Who's
yes,
the guy
yes,
in
yes.
office space?
Milton. Yeah. Milton in office office space. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I was just that guy in the back with like a single lamp, working at like a rolling, I think a rolling like shipping container or something like that.
Yep.
And then I had like a, you know, an old desktop computer.
Oh,
on top
dude,
of it,
have you seen the photo of me in the dungeon at Surcell?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You've
yeah.
Seen?
I think you sent that last. I think maybe we have had this conversation here.
Yeah.
But
I was literally in the basement next to the fire escape.
Yep.
Just classic. Surrounded by chairs because they used it as a chair storage place. I'm just surrounded by like 50 chairs.
Yeah. You were the chairman.
Yep. Oh boy. Yeah.
Cool.
Is that like? Do you have to go through something like that to to like? Is it like a rite of passage in the industry to like have a shit cubicle or whatever?
I don't know. I think about some of the people. I've been doing a lot of resume review lately.
Yeah.
I'm helping to hire people. It is quite an interesting, it's very interesting as like a, as an exercise. It really is tough over time because you start to like, everything starts to look the same.
Yeah.
It's like, it really starts to differentiate or it's hard to differentiate people after looking at that many resumes.
Yep.
But some people, they don't have grunt work. You know, like they don't have like
right
the food service job or, you know, like I respect seeing a food service job on a resume.
See, I've never had that. I have never had a non-professional engineering job. I got my first job when I was 17. No, yeah,
paper, right?
Really. I have never had a
Come on, man. I've been working since I was 12.
Well, yeah, like I did my own stuff. I actually.
That's true. You had your software company, right?
Collected like cans. I had my software. I was selling software. I was actually collecting cans because you got
deposit back.
You get the deposit back or whatever. And, you know, I was doing stuff like that, but I never actually worked for, I never worked at McDonald's.
Right.
I never
like
worked.
Employer.
You know, I never, my first job at 17 was as a tech working at an engineering company. So
there you go. Okay. Yeah.
So I've never had a
I'm sure I've said this on the show before too, but my first job was working for Warren Buffett.
Really? Doing what?
Yeah, he owned, at the time he owned the Buffalo News, which is the local, I grew up in Buffalo, New York.
Right.
And Buffalo News was the newspaper there, and I was a paper boy. So
paper boy. Okay. All right.
Warren Buffett was my first boss.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure those coins you got came straight out of his pocket, you know.
Yeah, that's right. He really felt it when he was. You know, these paper boys, they're taking me to the coins.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, I don't know if I can pay you this week. I'm a bit short, you know. Can you?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yep. Okay. So I get the hint that you would look down on somebody who hasn't done. Or you won't.
No.
You would prefer
somebody
has done the grunt work.
I don't count it against people. Some people would be like, "Oh, why would they put that on here?" But I feel like it's like you're saying, it's like a rite of passage. It's like it's just grunt work showing you can like show up. You know, if you have like 2 years,
it shows
of like
that
working
you show
in food
up.
Service
yeah.
in high school. Yeah. Like, it means you were like, you know, probably.
It shows that you can put up with. Not so much crap, but, you know, just
like not the best
non-ideal job, right?
Yeah,
you aren't going to bail in 3 months because it wasn't the, you know,
because it's hard.
Fantastic job you thought it was, you know. Yeah,
I think that's right. But, you know, anyways, I think just with looking at that many resumes, some people, you know, they go high school to uni to Google internship to, you know,
right.
It's just some people just, they've been in the, they've been on that top
tier
thing.
They got a scholarship so they didn't have to pay for their uni by working in a, you know, at at night or whatever. So
Oh man, I had like the most choice campus job. I just handed athletes towels and then did my homework when there was no one there. It was like the best job. It was a work study job, so it was like, you know, a financial aid kind of thing as well. But what a great job. Yeah. Washing and handing out towels. That's the job to have, folks.
So you just stood in the locker room and handed out towels to the jocks?
There was like an equipment. Jocks? No, there was like an equipment room. They would like stop by, they'd get a towel, and they'd walk to the locker room. And I would just be sitting there like studying and just being like, there's a towel. Great job.
Oh, boy. That's great.
Yeah. Grunt jobs. Speaking of workspaces, this is a pretty weak segue. I've been working on moving my workspace into the cloud. This is another thing I talked about 2 weeks ago when we talked about like things I wanted to be learning. And I've been working on GitHub Actions. I'm actually kind of curious from your experience of like doing embedded programming and then like doing a firmware release. Like, what's the most distributed method you've seen in that way in your career in the past? Like,
what do you mean by distributed method?
Yeah, like, was it always like what was the release process like in doing firmware stuff when you've done firmware software cuts in the past? Was it like somebody built it on their machine and they kind of like submitted it for approval? I've seen it like lots of different ways, but the modern ways.
Well, I did work at a software company. I actually worked at Altium, so I know how Altium do it. But apart from that, at engineering companies, no. I've basically been the sort of like software firm that we did was, you know, it wasn't for public product release so it was quite different. So it's quite a different experience than doing like a public product release. Say you're doing firmware for a new mobile phone or something that's going to be pushed out to everyone. You're doing firmware for an oscilloscope or something like that, right? That's going to be pushed out to everyone. That's quite a different process.
Yeah. I think even like Keithley, when I was there, Keithley and some of the other jobs too, like there was still being, like they would do, it wasn't me, right? It was other people, but there were still like local builds, you know? You would attach that binary to like a release and, you know, you'd have people test it, of course, right? It wouldn't just be like one person like pushing out to the world. But then, you know, when you pushed a new binary to the manufacturer, right? It'd be like you'd test out this binary, people would test it on their machines locally, whatever. And then you'd like literally attach it to a document or an email and you'd send it over to the manufacturer, right? Like that would be one way to do it. And modern methodologies are obviously very, very different with like continuous integration, continuous deployment. And so I've been trying to do that on some projects that I've been working on. And it's tough, Dave.
I know. Well, I can tell you how we did it at Altium.
Okay.
I haven't explained this before, I don't think.
Maybe. I don't remember.
Anyway, I'll explain how Altium worked. Altium, we had a daily build. By we, I mean it was not our hardware group, but for the software programmers, right? There was an automatic daily build, right? So
like a build server somewhere, right?
Right. Yeah. So there was a master source code. So anytime you submitted your little routine, you know, a new feature or whatever, it'd be incorporated in the new daily build, right? And as part of the hardware group, and also we were also one of the groups that actually tested the software and gave feedback and said, feature you're trying to put in, it sucks, it's broken, you know. So we were encouraged to, even when we were designing real products, real hardware products, we were encouraged to use the daily build, right?
Yeah.
And it was that was kind of living on the edge. I can neither confirm nor deny that between the hardware group, we may or may not have had a secret agreement to use a build that we trusted. But anyway, you would use the daily build and then you'd find issues like that and then you'd fix them and stuff. So everyone, including the programmers and the hardware group, anyone in the company could access the new and install the new daily build. And it was easy to like install the new build and actually run it. It just took minutes, right? Start of the day, you know, I'll try out the new daily build. And then as an actual release, we released twice per year. This is when we did the summer-winter bullshit thing, you know, summer-winter release, which is so dumb.
Yeah, you do it right before everybody goes on break. That's,
yeah,
what,
right.
That's the best way to do it.
And, yeah, that, I'm sort
we'll,
of...
We'll fix stuff when we get back.
I don't remember the exact price. Oh, and for the daily build, there was also automated testing as well. They had countless automated testing scripts. And then, you know, so you could often tell if a, like, a daily build was just crap. It just, you know, failed or whatever. Or it had too many issues. You wouldn't bother even testing it, like, yourself on your own computer.
Yep.
Yeah, basically, the for release, everyone within the company would sort of like give their feedback. And we, like, it was the vibe kind of thing. Okay, this one has the least errors in it. This one feels good. Everyone's using it. This, you know, so we'd sort of hone into a particular release. And then that would be the one that's actually released as the summer or winter release.
Yeah, and that's definitely a lot more complex than the stuff that I'm doing, because there's no like UI. I'm like,
no, we're
literally
talking millions of lines of code
here,
right? We're talking millions of lines, right? So, anyways,
I've been doing, you know, trying to get this stuff on. So basically, what I'm trying to do is take the Simplicity Studio, which is a Silicon Labs tool, which is an IDE, and I'm trying to now put that into GitHub Actions and do, you know, and so Sean Himmel, who's
what is this Actions thing? What is this GitHub Actions?
Yeah, so GitHub Actions is basically like you can within GitHub, right? So you can create a action so that like you can say on commit or on when you push to a certain branch.
Right. So it's like a script kind of thing. If something happens, do this.
Sort of. That it's more like there's like a configuration file in there, and I'll link in a really good series by Sean Himmel. So he did it for DigiKey. Sean's at Edge Impulse, but he's been doing, like, he was at SparkFun previously, and he's done a lot of great videos for the DigiKey folks.
Right.
And basically the idea is that like you can kind of tell it when you want this stuff to run, but then you can also tell it like, all right, now I want you to spin up, basically it's a container, but it's, you know, think about it like a virtual machine. And then like when you spin up this virtual machine, you go and install, in this case, it's in Sean's example, he's talking about Python. And then, you know, you're going to pull in this piece of code, run this test file on it, and then show me the result and show that it passed. So that's like one thing you could do.
So you can install this software on the GitHub server?
So they'll actually spin up compute for you. Yeah, it's really interesting. Right. I mean, like, and so...
So you could run your microcontroller tool on the GitHub server.
Well, this is where, yeah, and that's where I am bonking on this stuff, because so like the way Sean's showing it and the way that it's like kind of general, like there's kind of like a general, like thinking about it like a Linux system, like you can go and install these different packages on there. You could like take this generic Linux system, think about it like an Ubuntu type system. You can install these packages on there. Then you can kind of pass files into it and run them on this now kind of generic system, like I said, running Python. But now I have to, because I'm normally building on a Windows IDE, I either have to go and use the Linux version of those tools, put those in a container, make the container available to the GitHub Actions and actually like push code through there, or I have to change the compiler so that it's no longer using the Simplicity Studio and IDE plus the Kyle like C51 compiler and use SDCC instead. So that's like kind of like what I'm trying to figure out right now. But the promise of it all is that you then have kind of the standardized system. And, you know, when you think about the benefits of it all, like, you know, the kind of the idea of like, it works on my computer. Why doesn't it work on your computer?
Right.
It's like, oh, well, I have V4. I have Simplicity Studio V4 and you have V5 and something's changed and there's no way to possibly tell what the difference is. But like literally, if you compare the binaries, they are different binaries. Like that's bad.
Right.
And now if you have this system where it's always spit out from the exact same virtual machine effectively, then everybody is always going through the same pipe and the same compiler. And it's like, you can really start to standardize. So that's what a lot of big teams do. And obviously this is a thing that's been in the software world for years and years and years and years. So yeah, it's a strange new world for me, but it's like, you know, I'm sure anyone who's in like the DevOps world are like, yeah. And right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just standard process for them. Right.
Yeah. It's just exactly.
Yeah.
So what
do you stand to gain from all this magic?
Well, right now, I actually think back to a former company I worked at, and I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but like some of the revision control methods was like putting a laptop into a file cabinet. And it had like a tool chain on it. And
swapping
it like,
hard drives, you know. And
put the whole laptop into the cabinet be like, well, if we need a compiler, let me just pull out that laptop.
And it's
like,
that is
real bad, right?
Well, it's actually not. It does work.
What happens? You love posting photos on Twitter of corroded batteries and like dead hard drives.
Well,
and all
take
of the things
freaking batteries out, right?
Sure,
have
take
a
the batteries
backup
out,
hard drive.
Sure, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do there, but you know, a lot of things can go wrong. You really should make it replicable in not just one computer. You shouldn't have a single failure point like that generally, right? Like, you know, you get hit by a, you know, you. So that's another thing too. Like it's the hit by a bus test, right? Your laptop gets hit by a bus and that's the one that it's like proven on. Well, then you got to go and replicate it on another laptop. That's bad. But what if Chris gets hit by a bus?
Yeah.
Like that's another thing that like is a true concern, you know, and from, you know, a consulting concept as well. Like I think about like being able to deliver a thing to a client and saying like, look, you can fire me at any time. That is something that that should be possible in any consulting job you do. I think maybe some people don't agree with that, but I think that's the case.
Totally.
I think that actually should give a client a lot of like confidence, right? It's like basically saying like, I stand behind my work. If you don't like it, you will be able to replicate everything I do here because it's documented. There's all of the tool chain is, you know, on GitHub or whatever.
Yeah, but then your smart contractors don't want to do that because they know it's that's called job security, right? That's called contract security, is by sort of obfuscate, like you being the person that they absolutely need.
Yeah.
Right? You're almost doing yourself out of a job there, right?
Yeah, you're totally right. It could be, but like, I think that is, I'm not sure I would qualify the people that don't do that as smart contractors. Maybe shrewd, maybe profitable,
right?
But I'm not sure I'd say smart. I don't want to personally operate like that. I want to make it so that someone rid of me.
It's not smart on the part of the contractor to do that. It's smart on the part of the company to insist on it, right? They are two different things.
I think of it as a marketing element for me as a consultant, right?
Okay.
Me as a consultant,
you could,
being able to
you could market
present
that.
Myself
you could market
in
that,
that. Way
yeah, right.
Is a, you know, the way that a consultant
anyone can
gets
take
more
this
work
over. You can, yeah.
Is, well, I think right. the way that a consultant gets more work is by word of mouth.
Right.
You know, if you put yourself forward as someone that does good work, documents well, and all that stuff.
Yeah. Totally. You could make it a marketing proposition. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like, you know, like a negative marketing kind of thing, right? It's like not like a, I just say I do this. I think it's literally like the way that you work and people will, I think other engineers will respect that and you'll get lots of work that way.
Sure.
There's no shortage of work.
I would
done.
Not doubt that. Yep.
So, yeah.
Fair enough.
That is all to say, I think setting up these systems so that if something does go wrong with me or, you know, say I'm just unavailable, I get sick for a month, right? Someone else should be able to trigger a new build if they need to. It should be documented enough that it should be replicable and that sort of thing. And then in a more realistic scenario, if you bring on people to try and do some force multiplication and get other people, you know, doing PRs or doing code reviews, they should also be able to replicate the stuff without having to have the tool chain on their box, right? Because then you start to think about like different on my system than your system, that sort of thing.
Yep.
That is all to say, I have not gotten a word in yet. So it's in the works.
Yes, right. Okay.
Yeah. But it is possible. It's just, you know, my setup currently is not there. So
yeah, because you're not a software professional who would do this just like that, right?
Yeah, right. And there's, you know, and there's like other systems that are out there, like Jenkins is one that I've heard of that I've never used, but GitHub Actions is the one I'm using. Mm-hmm. There's another, Travis CI is another one, continuous integration. So, and good folks like Philip from Embedded Artistry, he's done a bunch of stuff about that. So you can go and read some of his stuff as well. I just think generally this is a, you know, again, this is like a thing that's been in the software world for 20 years, 20 plus years.
Totally.
Now, right. And it's just like the fact that it's not, it's interesting to me, like as I talk to more silicon vendors in my daily work about like you know, and just like how they operate. And every silicon vendor, I feel like, is becoming a software company by necessity as well. And just like this stuff kind of slowly trickling down into the hardware world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there's also younger engineers that are kind of learning this stuff in school and bringing it up through the ranks as well. It's an interesting like mix and culture clash, and just like seeing how kind of more senior engineers operate versus how younger engineers operate, and just expectations and all right. that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
it's a interesting cultural shift that is coming. Yeah, right. I think.
Well, good luck trying to get working.
I'm going to get it, Dave. I'm going right. to get it. I'm not too worried.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is that something you can like just hire someone to show you how to do it? Like, you know, like hire someone for a day to show you.
Guess what I did today?
Oh,
yeah,
right.
Actually, I put out a Upwork post today.
Ah,
hoping to get some instruction.
Yep.
So yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought. Yep.
Yeah. Trying to get better. So yeah, I think it's about understanding, you know, like there's a lot of people that understand like the DevOps containerization kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I know that a little bit, but it's, I think there's also, you'd need to know a little bit about embedded tools too. I think maybe I'm wrong.
Okay.
But if people are out there and listening, they're like, oh, I could show that to Chris in an hour. Like,
right.
Yeah, shoot me an email. I'd love to.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
How about this? On the multimeter firmware, or not the firmware,
mm-hmm.
what does it look like when people try to build like the app, like the Bluetooth app? Like you went through all that GitLab, GitHub stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
What does that build process look like? That's like built locally on your computer?
That's built. Yes. Yes, that's built entirely locally. Mm. That was just running on a single instance on David Tu's computer here in the lab. Yep.
Mm.
Yeah, sorry. It's nothing fancier than that. He just had the tools
fine.
On it.
And, it's fine.
You know? Yep.
Yeah. There's one other thing that's actually, I forget what they call it, like, there's infrastructure as code is a different thing. There's one where like now, so like GitHub has another thing, and there's another company called GitLab, where basically like you actually, as part of like what you commit to a repo, you also commit the entire tool chain into the repo as well.
David used that. He used GitLab.
I meant what it was.
Yes, you said GitLab.
I'm sorry. Gitpod is the one I was trying to think of.
I haven't heard of Gitpod.
Yeah, Gitpod and there's a GitHub workspaces are the two things where basically you commit the entire, so you basically, you send this tool chain as like another file that's in your repo as well. And then instead of installing anything on your computer, now because you have all your tooling running in a virtual machine or a container.
Isn't that exactly what you want? Why aren't you using Gitpod then? Isn't that exactly, I'm actually on the page here and it sounds like exactly what you want.
It's a little different. It's in that you would still use it to maybe build the output and stuff like that. It's not the automation piece, right? It's actually, so imagine you and I are working on an STM32 embedded project, right? And we use Gitpod and we have all the configuration file. We have the like Gitpod integration file there. What it would do is it would instantiate a container, it would install all the tool chain in there, and then you and I would both have like a browser-based VS code effectively that then, you know, we look at the code there and then it basically pushes that code to this container, and you and I would both have our own browsers, but we'd have the exact same
container.
Thing
yeah, you'd be there. Working on the same container and yep, right.
Right. And okay. so then the key thing though, the way I think about that being different is like, okay, so now we move a month later, right, we go to implement a new sensor and we pull in a new sensor library. And I would be able to go and compile with the old tool chain. I would be able to like go back in the Git history
right.
and compile with the old tool chain without that new sensor stuff built into it. But then I'd be able to switch immediately and have the entire new tool chain by just moving back and forth throughout the Git history.
Because the Git
history
got it.
Has like a different configuration file throughout time.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so you're carrying that stuff with you. So that's kind of how I think about like workspaces and Gitpod. What you would then do is that once you know that's working, right? So then now we like this new sensor, we say this configuration is great. Then we would also push that configuration into the automated build piece so that now every time I go and do a commit, it would also run it through all these, it would use that same container because it's already embedded with the with the code, you would say, you'd point at that configuration file, like, here's how you're going to build this thing. You're going to do that in an automated way every time. And then you might also run a battery of tests, that sort of thing.
Got it. Okay.
I'm really sorry if people are listening to this and like, Chris, you're such a goddamn idiot.
This should be embedded FM podcast.
Yeah, right. I'm recording with them on Saturday. Oh, so I'll be on there next week. And sounding like an idiot over there. So
you are a regular over there?
No, I'm a sometimes over there. Right. Sometimes it's been a while since I talked to them.
All right. Do we actually have anything hardware related on the list?
This is hardware. Dave, hardware is software these days.
We do. Anyway, kind of.
It's everywhere, man.
Thunderscope. This got a lot of, somebody asked about this on my live show the other day. My thoughts, I had not seen it. It grew out of a Hackaday project back in 2020, 2021 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was part of a contest or something. And it's a four-channel PCI scope. So it uses Thunderbolt, which I'm told is just a PCI interface. Is that right?
Okay. I don't know.
Thunderbolt is just PCI, apparently. It's just like PCI over a cable or something.
The edge connector looks like PCI.
It looks like PCI, right? So it looks like it can either be a plug-in PCIe, into your computer. Right, and PCIe.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Or it can plug into... So it looks like it can either plug into your PC or you can plug it into a cable, I guess, and put it in a box, I guess.
Prototyping.
I don't know, something like that. And you can get Thunderbolt ports on computers, can't you, on the back or something, or you can get a card or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, it looks really good. It looks like it's got a proper analog front end like you'd find on any modern scope. It's got a HAD 1511 ADC, four-channel ADC. I think it's only 1 gig sample per second, but I think it's 350 meg analog bandwidth. Don't quote me on that.
Mm.
And it looks quite good. You know, like they've got proper shielded cans and stuff like that. And it looks like a good project. When I was having a look at this just a minute ago, I just got the sudden idea. Why couldn't you take, because scopes are fairly cheap these days, right? Scopes are cheap.
Sure.
Right, you know, for $400 you can buy a four channel really kick ass scope, and they're all like single ball construction. If you've seen my teardown, right, they're all just
they're
just a small little
thinner.
Single
it's like
ball
a power supply and a night really fancy silicon on there, but
and it's got an applications processor which drives the screen and everything else, but you could and they usually have remote networking capabilities, so there's actually no reason why you couldn't actually buy a scope, take it out of its case, put it in a little desktop case, and you actually convert it to a PC-based scope. I mean, sure, these manufacturers also sell PC-based scopes, but generally, I think they're much more expensive. Why couldn't you convert a...
I mean, probably because you wouldn't want to take apart a fancy scope.
But... You would. Well, it's only $400, right?
It's not
a $4,000 scope, right? It's only $400.
Yeah, true.
You could convert it into a little desktop, but then you could argue, well, what's the point? Because you're only changing the form factor. You might as well, if you want the remote capability, just stick the Ethernet in the back of it, and Bob's your uncle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah. I just thought it'd be neat.
This is cool. I mean, this is cool.
Yep. But once again, it's all in the software, as you said, right? Yes. The hardware's nice. It looks like they're doing all the right things. It looks like a front end I'd see in any modern scope. It's got a Koto. Looks like a shielded relay there. Is that for the switching the 50 ohm termination? I'm not sure if it's got 50 ohm termination, but then it looks like, you know, they've got a Fujitsu relay in there, Japanese relay. Nice. Looks like they've got the same front end, like a programmable gain differential amp in there that's used in every modern scope. It's a TI part or something. And but all the magic, of course, is going to happen in the Xilinx RTX 7, right, which has an ARM core in it, and you know, you can run all that sort of stuff. So
cool,
there you go. So somebody's developed, I presume it's open source.
It is open source, certified.
Open source, yes, software defined.
They have a Discord.
Yeah
I wish I would have seen this. It was part of the Hackaday Prize back in 21, I think. So
nice,
they're part of the EE Vendors.
What's EE Vendors?
Is that like a EE Vengers, like the Avengers.
EE Vengers. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What is the right? Is that a group of?
I don't. You haven't hardcore. Got an invite to it. Sorry, Dave. No. Yeah. 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 You know, EEV Thor, EEV Iron Man.
Right. Okay. I'd be
terrible
like,
name. Terrible joke.
Well, which character would I be?
You'd be EEV Blog.
Right. I'd be Blog Man. I'd be Blog Man.
With the power to post to WordPress and YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God, speaking of WordPress, sucks ass. I tried to create a new website the other day for, I won't say why, but I tried to create a new website.
Oh, come on. It's,
and No. I tried to create a website for some non-related thing. And I thought, I'll just spin up a bloody WordPress website, right? Because I've got like a host thing which, you know, can install WordPress automatically. Yeah. You hit a single button, right? Installed
like
WordPress. And yeah, I tried to look through the bloody templates. Do you think I can get something freaking working? I thought I was a WordPress guru, right? I probably was like 10 years ago. Right?
Right, right.
But it was my God. So I moved, like, it's got so jack of it. I moved to another thing called SitePad. I think it's called. Is it called?
Yeah, like low code, no code.
SitePad. Kinda, it's like, yeah. It's similar to WordPress. Like, yeah, it's actually called SitePad. And it's just a website builder, very similar to WordPress. And it just worked a lot better. And bam, I just learned how to use that in like an hour. And I managed to get my website done without too much
that
fun.
WordPress platform, it's so popular, nobody goes there anymore.
That's right. I was just stunned that I couldn't do it easily anymore. Like I don't know whether or not it was the shit templates I was using or what, but I just couldn't get anything to look the way I wanted it to look. It was just too hard. I don't know.
Stuff. Yeah. Stuff.
Just thought I'd mention that because it pissed me off, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that? Have you ever had the experience where, oh, geez, I thought I was good at this because you did it 8 years ago. I thought I was good at this stuff and then it's I don't know, it's changed and you just suck at it now? Or has that ever happened to you?
I mean, literally every time I open KiCad. Yeah, right. That's pretty much that.
Right, every time you open KiCad. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because it's so constantly changing or?
Mostly because it's like my use is so spotty these days. And then also, it does change.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I'm like.
Oh, you totally lose the flow of it. Like, you know, back when I was doing PCB every
daily
day.
Driver.
Like, you know.
Actually,
no,
it's even worse
me.
With FreeCAD as well.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, because it's just like when you're out of the flow, like if you're not in it every day, that muscle atrophies quickly.
Well, that's my problem. You know, you're always telling me, okay, get a 3D printer, learn a skill like, 3D modeling. Yeah, great. And then I spend a couple of weeks or a month doing it. Okay, I'm fairly proficient. I can at least get some, you know, stuff done. And then I don't use it for 12 months and then I suck at it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is the, you know, so I've been... talking about it with some people, you know, like my, again, bring up 2 weeks ago, I talked about like wanting to learn all these different skills and whatever. And the one thing that came up when I was talking to some folks about it is like, you know, you really need a project in this.
Yeah,
case.
Yeah.
Like, I need long going project and I need to find something that I want to build. And like, but that alone is actually kind of hard too, because it does, you know, everything seems kind of trite or it doesn't, you know, just really got to like swallow my pride.
That's why, this, as I talked about before, this project that I'm going to hopefully do that. Yeah. It sits on a desk. And it can either be with or without a case. And that will, you know, get me into like 3D printing. It'll like, I've got to design
and
my own case.
Hopefully other things too, right?
Okay. Yeah, yeah,
that's,
of course.
That's like how it goes.
Yeah. Maybe I can then do I'm going to make these. Hey, pick and place machine time, you know.
Sure.
Who knows?
Right? I mean, you could also do like, you know, you try out new Altium. You know, like even like upgrading to a different Altium, that sort of thing.
Well,
like,
at the moment I don't have an Altium license, so I'd have to use KiCad.
Right. I would suck worse than you at KiCad
because I have used KiCad, but I've never really done a project in anger in KiCad, right? I've never done like a...
Yeah, that is the test.
Yes, to actually do one from scratch.
It's a different take on the 2 a.m. problem when you're just like, I just need to do this one goddamn thing.
Yeah,
why won't I go?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to it's gonna suck ass.
That's usually me and FreeCAD these days, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because Altium don't want to give me a freaking license anymore. So, you know, So
I'm sure
they
would if you groveled, but
No, they just don't seem
to open source. Come on, man.
Yeah,
open
source. I'll probably just, probably do it in KiCad or something.
You know, Dave, I'll help you. I will tutor you.
Oh,
you just let me know.
No, I'm not.
Yeah,
I don't need anyone to tutor me. I can learn a bloody PCB package. Yep, no, I refuse to have anyone help me.
That's the spirit. That's how you learn.
Yep, that's it. I got too much pride, damn it.
Yeah.
No one's going to help me lay out a board.
Now, here's what you do. You hire someone on Upwork, you have them show you how to do it, and then you go on YouTube and you record yourself doing it. You're like, oh, I learned this all on my own.
Yeah, I'm an expert. Yeah, exactly.
I'm an expert. I just had this preternatural, you know, ability that I just...
All right.
Just comes to me.
Yeah. Boy.
All right, off to go learn some new things around here, I guess.
Well, our amp hour is well and truly up. We're way over. Let's get out of here.
Yep.
Catch you next time.